Hello, and welcome to the Imposter Syndrome Network podcast, where everyone belongs, especially if you think you don't. My name is Chris Grundemann, and this is the Mark Calkins episode. Mark is a longtime friend and colleague. He's a network engineer and architect who has never strayed into content creation or marketing like many of our other guests have, although he did let himself become a manager. I thought I was hot shit when I met Mark 17 years ago or so, and he showed me that there are folks out there both smarter and harder working than I am, because he was both. But don't take my word for it. Here's how another colleague of Mark's has described him. I can confidently say that he is an exceptional professional who consistently exceeds expectations. Mark's expertise in network architecture and design is unparalleled. His ability to strategize, design, and implement complex global network infrastructures is truly impressive. Mark recognizes the power of technology to streamline operations and enhance productivity, and his forward-thinking mindset and willingness to embrace emerging technologies have positioned our team at the forefront of innovation. I highly recommend Mark for any leadership position that requires a visionary, results-driven professional who can lead teams to achieve remarkable outcomes. While those are not my words, I cannot disagree with any of them. Hey, Mark, welcome to the show. Would you like to introduce yourself a bit further to the Imposter Syndrome Network?
Sure. I mean, that's a lot to follow up on. Who said that anyway?
I think it was Elisa.
Oh, wow.
Well, in America, we call her Lisa, I guess. I don't know.
Thank you, Elisa. Let's see. Where would I build on that? That's a tall structure to try to build on top of. I would also add that I don't think I'm really one of the best at building things. I am one of the best at fixing things, though. And I kind of, my approach to architecture and building is kind of like troubleshooting in reverse. It's kind of how I approach things. And you know, what would I do if this was broken? How would I build it?
That's interesting. So
I would add that I'm a good troubleshooter as well.
Nice. That's awesome. Let's dive in here. That is interesting, though. I've never heard the idea of like designing a network by troubleshooting in reverse. I really like that idea. Maybe what's interesting to start with first here is, because I think you have a clear idea of what you're good at and what you're not. How did you learn what you're good at?
I was lucky in that I found it very early. I was maybe 8 or 9 years old when I took apart my first radio and later a TV. And luckily, I didn't get shocked by the CRT. I didn't know that at the time. But I loved electronics. I loved diving into how they worked and why they didn't work. And I mean, I was fixing stuff as a little child. By the time I hit 11 or 12 years old, I think I was running my first BBS, mostly so my friends and I could game, you know, Doors games is what they called them back then. So I found what I was good at very early. Luckily, a lot of people have to, you know, go through their lives for a long time before they find that. And I knew basically right away I wanted to work in electronics and communications on top of that. And I did. So it really, really worked out for me. You know, I was lucky on the early career part.
Yeah, that's great. That is awesome. You had kind of that, I guess, privilege to be around electronics, to be able to kind of take them apart. Right, and have parents that were willing to let you tear something apart.
Yeah, I remember my father getting rather angry a few times. He still allowed me to explore, you know, what I was interested in. So
yeah, that's cool. So what do you do now? What's your title, and what do you actually do?
So I am now at Oregon Health and Science University, or OHSU, which is a research organization, a hospital, and a university. So my job title is an IT systems engineer, which sounds like a step down compared to some of my previous titles, but I firmly believe titles don't really matter. It's what you bring to a role. And it's really interesting. My day to day, I could be helping a, you know, doctor in an operating room with the remote controlled operating thing, or I could be helping a researcher, you know, get 100 gigs of bandwidth to somewhere that does not typically have that kind of bandwidth, you know, available. It's a really interesting day to day, and you know, whether the job title is cool or not, I really, really am digging my current role.
Yeah, I just finished reading Machiavelli's Discourses, and he right towards the end of the book, which I just finished, he says something along those lines of like, and I think he's quoting somebody from before him as well, but something like the title doesn't make the man makes a title, or something like that. Yeah. Or no, a title doesn't bring honor to a person. A person brings honor to a title.
Oh, that's even better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
I like that.
Cool. So maybe walking us back, I mean, you mentioned that you had other titles that maybe sounded more impressive. Can you give us a snapshot of your career? And I know you've made a few changes. There's been, you know, quite a few years of working in the industry now. So that's, you know, a long list, but maybe, you know, the snapshot of Mark's career from, you know, taking apart that TV to working to help the researchers at Oregon.
Good idea. All right. So let's see, what was the first one? My first notable job was I worked for GTE Internetworking. I was like 18 and a half years old or something like that. This was 1998 peak .com bubble. They were hiring anybody that could spell internet. And luckily I could spell internet pretty well. So I got a job at GTE Internetworking. They owned at the time BBN, which had AS1. So like I got the whole sort of like second generation internet introduction of, oh wow, I'm on AS1. This is a, you know, amazing thing. Like it means literally nothing to the rest of the world, but it was a very amazing thing to a nerd. And so started there, later became Genuity when Verizon was formed, whatever. Then eventually ended up, I'd say my next notable job was TW Telecom, where I was a network engineer in operations. We met there. I mean, I can't say enough good things about that role, how much I learned. It's insane. It was, you know, constantly pouring the best practices of how you build a global backbone and operate it, you know, were instilled in me and, you know, in that job pretty much. Later went to an architecture role at TW Telecom. And then I went to my first role, I would say, that I felt had some purpose to it, or something extra more than just the neat gee whiz, this is cool stuff. And that's when I was at Viasat, and we were connecting, you know, rural Americans and people in airplanes. We were one of the first ones with KA, high-speed internet in airplanes. So that was pretty cool. The gee whiz factor really drove me a long ways, but being able to see the impact of my work was pretty cool. I almost liked it more, you know. And then after that, it was off to Packet Fabric, where I spent the last 7 years or so, up until about 6 months ago. So I was, I think, employee number 10 and grew that role. I just started as a network engineer. Grew that role into running the network team. I was the VP of network engineering at one point, up to 20 employees, I believe. And while, you know, I excelled at that role, I don't think I would ever be a manager again. I'm happy to be a leader. I'm not happy to play the politics and, you know, money games that seem so prevalent in our industry now. But, you know, what are you gonna do?
Yeah. It was definitely fun to be involved in the very, you know, some of the early days of it, right? As you were, and I think I was as well a little bit. And to see that kind of pioneering spirit and scrappiness. And definitely now the internet companies have become like real companies. We're all grown up now, and it's a little different.
It's not all engineers for engineers or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But that's fine. I guess that's evolution.
Yeah, it also means there's more money in it.
There is.
If you dig around a little bit. But I think that also brings up a really good point, right? Because you talked about like the politics of being a leader in Packet Fabric, but just in general, kind of at a big internet company, which, you know, rolling back to our time together at what was Time Warner Telecom and then TW Telecom and then Lumen and then CenturyLink and then Lumen.
Briefly Level 3, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. But at our time there, I think one of the things that made that role, at least in my opinion, one of the things that made that role so awesome was our manager. Matt Moriarty kept all of the politics of that company, which admittedly wasn't that big, but was the biggest company I've ever worked at still. I think like 1,400 employees, which was, you know, was huge, but we saw none of that, right? We were totally sheltered in our group. We got to just do the work, which was pretty cool.
Exactly. That's an interesting point. And that was probably one of my weaknesses as a manager. I would get frustrated and let some of that kind of stuff roll downhill. So, yeah.
It's hard not to.
My bad, but yeah, Matt was great. And thank you, Matt, if you're listening to this, you know, you did good.
You did. And then the other piece that was really important there, which I totally didn't recognize until many years later, was the Sella brothers and like the infrastructure that they had put in place before we even got there.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Cause I like, as like you, I kind of learned how to run a big network in that role, right? That was where I kind of say, okay, like a lot of the best practices I still use today, I learned there. And at the time I was young enough that I was like, oh, these are like the best, this is just how you do it. Not realizing that all of the structure of what those best practices were and how we implemented them, and having like a database with all the configs and all the, you know, I mean, we essentially had a source of truth before that was a term.
We did, before that was even a thing, right? We're definitely standing on giants, the shoulders of giants, you know. The sellers are great. I wonder what they're up to these days.
Yeah, that's a good question. So in all of that, you know, I think one thing we often talk about here is, you know, you've had a really successful career, I think. Have there been, you know, low points and specifically like maybe mistakes you've made that were embarrassing or just, you know, cringeworthy at the time? I mean, can you think back on any times where, I mean, one, have you had those kind of mistakes? And then two, is there one that's worth worth getting a laugh out of?
I mean, I've had mistakes like, you know, melting down a global network before, stuff like that. Not entirely my fault, but there were circumstances I probably could have avoided to not do that. So, you know, moving fast and breaking things sometimes it can end up being embarrassing, I guess. That's what really the only thing I can think of. It was a packet fabric. It was very early days. You know, we were doing a code upgrade on a device in the middle of the day that had no customers. And that's normally totally fine. But we were running very aggressively new code on the routers. And there's apparently a bug where when Keep Alive stopped coming from the RSVP daemon to other routers, the other routers would core. So I took a router down for an upgrade and it told all its neighbors, my Keep Alives are going away now. And every other neighbor then crashed. And then all of their neighbors crashed. And then all of their neighbors crashed. So it was really a Juniper problem, but I'm the one that was at the keyboard.
You triggered it. Yeah.
So. And then, you know, they would boot back up and do the same thing. So,
oh man. So can you talk about how that feels when you're kind of watching this like cascading failure happen at the end of your fingertips?
I'm not sure I've ever felt that kind of panic in other situations before. And then having to catch yourself and you have to fix it now. I mean, it is kind of humbling. That's for sure. Yeah. I mean, trying to work under those conditions is a real challenge, but pulled it out and I could probably do it with a little lower heart rate today if it happened again.
Maybe. That is the gift of experience, I think, right? If anything, just a little bit lower heart rate. I like that. And you're right. I mean, I think that is something that for a lot of, I think, in you know, digital infrastructure and IT generally, right? There's these situations where something happens, you're involved in it happening, whether it was, you know, directly your fault or not, the fact that you were even, you know, nearby it, right? I've talked to people who, somebody, you know, racked a switch poorly and then the next person comes along and closes the cabinet and the fiber gets, you know, crimped off and causes an outage, which wasn't really that person's fault. But if you're the one who closed the door, it's panic inducing anyway. But then you can't spiral, right? You've got to like, okay, this is terrifying, but I've got to fix it.
I'd say that's one of the harder things to do as a leader too, is trying to get your people not to spiral when they're having their minute, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of just have to let them do it, but also not let them fall in the hole, you know, it's tough.
It is. Do you have any advice for how you've approached that with folks? I mean, is it just encouragement? Is it just kind of the patting on the shoulder? I mean, or is there anything you found that works or maybe even doesn't work?
Getting angry doesn't work.
Fair.
I know that. Yelling doesn't work. Being direct and sympathetic or empathetic helps. But in the times that I've had to, you know, push someone along to, through an outage or something, just being direct is probably one of the number one things, but empathy second, definitely close.
Yeah. I like that a lot. And that's something that was really a struggle for me. Maybe still is, and maybe, you know, less of a struggle now, but that balance of, I don't know, I tend to be maybe too sharp when I'm being direct. So for a long time, I kind of avoided being direct, thinking I was being nice, which didn't actually work very well either. So I don't know, there's a fine line there. At least for me, I find that like being direct and not being an asshole together is hard for me.
A lot of times people think being nice is not saying something or, you know, letting something slide or whatever. A lot of times that's not actually the nice thing to do.
Right. Yeah. Another book I recently read again was, what is it? How to Win Friends and Influence People, the Dale Carnegie book. It's a great book. I'm a little conflicted about it because like one of the things that he kind of talks about is like, he almost says, you never tell somebody when they're doing something wrong, right? Because it just doesn't work, which I don't know, for me is really, 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 really hard. When I see somebody doing something wrong, I almost feel like it's like my moral obligation to point out that they're wrong. when he's right, though, it's almost always counterproductive.
It almost always is.
Yeah.
I mean, unless they work for you and they have to. But
yeah. Well, and that's what I'm struggling with. Or even then, right? It's kind of, what I try to do is like guide them down the right path versus telling them that the path they're on is wrong. Like, which again conflicts with the directness a little bit, right? It's you can still be direct, but say, hey, you know, some of it's, I don't know if you've ever done like leading by questions kind of thing where you say, hey, what if you tried this instead of telling them the path you're on is wrong, go over there.
Right. That is kind of more what I do. Maybe I'm not as direct as I thought, but I do sort of try to lead to water a little more than, hey, do this right now.
Yeah.
But I don't think I leave a whole lot of wiggle room in what I actually want them to do, in that way, but I don't know.
Right. Yeah. And again, I think there's this, it's interesting, just the whole kind of concept there of like how to do that well. What would you say is the greatest achievement of your career so far? And this can be like any way you measure it, right? What's something maybe that you're proud of or that just like kind of stands out? I don't know, for any reason.
I think it would be, focusing on that I want more purpose in my roles, which is something that I've just recently, gone after in the last couple of years. I think even though back to job titles, even though I probably have one of the lower job titles I've had in a long time, this is probably one of the best jobs purposeful wise, which means it's one of my best jobs that I've ever had. So I think looking into deeper into why I'm doing things and my purpose is, probably the best thing I've done in my career, up to this point. Besides that, I did get 2 JNCIEs at one point, so that was kind of cool, but not that that really matters much these days.
less and less, for various reasons. I really do like that idea that, finding and attaching that deeper meaning or deeper purpose to what you're doing. I can't.
I think it's critical. Like, I don't even know how I could get through the day just focusing on the what's and how's anymore. Like the what's and how's got me really far, but it's really the why that matters. So.
Yeah. That's the staying purpose. It's kind of, it reminds me a little bit of, there's like that, I think somewhere in Africa, African proverb about, if you want to go far, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. This feels kind of similar in that idea of like, if you want to, I don't know how to do it on the fly here. There's something there about, using kind of, there's 2 different types of intrinsic motivation, right? One is just like maybe pure curiosity, which is great, but then actually having that like reason behind it maybe is better. I don't know.
Right. Like the pure curiosity doesn't have the staying power.
Yeah. If you want to get interested, be curious. If you want to be accomplished, have purpose, I don't know. Someone else can make turn that into an actual quote at some point, maybe. What's the role where you learned the most? I mean, was that at TW Telecom or was there somewhere else where,
Yeah, I'd say it was TW Telecom for sure. Genuity maybe, because I had never logged into a real router in my life before then, but wasn't really capable of doing a whole lot until TW Telecom. Learned quite a bit there. I almost totally forgot. I had a job in Montana for a little while at a cable company.
Oh, yeah.
I did learn a lot there. I mean, they let me log into routers there. So I got to move fast and break things for some of the first times there. So that was useful. And, cable technology is kind of neat. RF in a cable.
Yeah. Constrained RF. It's wild.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Have you ever been part of a dysfunctional team? I think our team at TW was really good and worked really well together. We all kind of complement each other. But have you ever been on the opposite side where things just didn't quite line up or didn't quite work well or it was hard or painful? Or
no, I've been pretty lucky. I don't think I've ever really been on a bad team. Hopefully people that were on my teams would say the same thing about my teams that I ran. Right? But I don't think I've ever been on a bad team. I've been pretty lucky.
Cool. So then how would you define like... How do you know you're on a good team, or why do you think the teams you were on were good?
Like everyone is without manager interaction will be there to support you. And, if you're on call and struggling, someone will help you or offer advice or, there's no ego first kind of thing in the team. I think that's a big, big component, from the manager perspective, allowing that sort of thing to happen and, building the right personalities into the team. And sort of lost the question. Sorry.
All good. So we were talking about, it's like, yeah, just what makes a good team. And I think, you know, I think your first reaction sounds really good, right? Which is this kind of this camaraderie almost.
Yeah, I guess that's really it. Yeah.
Defining characteristics there. Yeah.
It's one of the big ones for sure.
Very cool. You mentioned that you had at one point, and I'm guessing the reason at one point is because you've let them expire, as I have let almost all of my certifications expire. Any that haven't expired is just because of the due date, not because I did anything proactive lately. But you had two GNCAs. I mean, thinking about certifications now in today's environment, because you did mention also that maybe they're less valuable than they were when you originally got them. You know, do you think that, I mean, what do you think about certifications today? Why would you say that they're less valuable? Are they just generally less valuable, or is it those certifications in particular? Or, you know, what do you think about certifications now?
I mean, now I've seen much more of the, you know, you pay to play kind of stuff to get certifications. Your company pays for your Amazon training class. You basically get a Amazon certification. I think even Juniper is doing this in some cases where you can just basically buy a certification. So they don't tell you much of anything anymore as a hiring manager. I mean, short of the lab certifications, they are still something. You sat for 8 hours and took a lab test. That's something that, you know, a lot of other people didn't do. So that from that point of view, they're great. I think overall, these days, if I'm a hiring manager, it's just maybe 10% of what I would look at in somebody if they have a bunch of certs. And, you know, doesn't seem to be as much, what would I say? They're not as rare. Everyone has a certification program.
Yeah. And is that because more people got them or just because more companies offered them or both?
I think both. And they made them easier to get, which it's not supposed to be the point, but kind of dilutes everything when they're easy to get.
Yeah, it's tough, right? Because for me, that was definitely, at least I saw it as a way of kind of opening some doors early in my career. Mm-hmm.
I think it was for me too. Yeah. Because we were both about the same age, I think late 20s. It definitely did help. Yeah. I mean, I remember feeling pretty accomplished that I had two GNCIEs right around the time I was 30.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is that was, you know, the GNCIE was the pinnacle of the Juniper Cert track. But I will say, I don't know. Well, it's not totally true. I was going to say that I don't think I've taken a job since then that actually cared at all about certifications. That's not totally true, though, because I did go a couple jobs after TW and ended up working at a VAR, right? A reseller. And resellers,
they love those.
Care about certifications. Yes. You're like it's just built into the whole partnership program where you have to. So that's not true. But I, you know, from a technology perspective, like it was interesting that like that was the pinnacle of certification. And then after that, I didn't really need that certification to get in the door anymore anywhere. I don't know what that means.
No, I know what you mean. And I was going to make the point that, you know, they're not always very current and stuff. And I just remembered that in 2011, I actually helped write the new JNCIE at the time, the JNCIE SP. So that was kind of fun. That was, you know, kind of put my trickery in the lab tests, you know, for people to run into. Number one tip for certifications, if there's anyone out there, read the whole form first. Don't even touch the keyboard until you've read the whole form, period. Because they're going to try to trick you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I guarantee it.
Absolutely. There is a little bit of that. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, so I think because you worked on the JNCIE, I think I helped with like the JNCIP.
Yeah, you did the JNCIP.
Right. Which was then being converted to a written test.
Right.
Because when we took it, we actually took two labs to get a JNCIE.
Right. The good old days.
Yeah. And then when we rewrote it, it was a written in a lab.
I kind of missed the double lab.
Definitely. And the lab testing, but at the same time, here's an interesting question, because I think you've gone from, you know, working in networking and kind of the, I don't know, I'll call it like, you know, the old school, very on-premises, device-centric view, and then, you know, more recently in a very much more automated fashion. I've been thinking about this lately. This is more deep into technology than we normally go on the show, but whatever. I've been thinking about this lately in that, you know, these lab tests, which are, or at least were, kind of the pinnacle of network engineering certification. It's, you know, build this network in this amount of time. And then it's fix this problem in this amount of time. And it almost, like, the thought I've been having lately is that it almost encourages like the cowboy engineer vibe of like, get in there, jump device to device, move as fast as you can, just like, you know, hack it up. And we don't really care too much about like, design and, you know, standardization and a lot of the things that now I focus most of my time on.
Right. That's actually a very interesting point. Yeah. The details are much more important now than any certification test is going to capture for you, at least anyone's I know of. Yeah. I mean, just think of how ugly those labs were that were left, yeah. The state they were left in whenever you finished troubleshooting or whatever.
Right. Is that a network you'd really want to put your customers on? Yeah.
I wonder how you'd capture that proficiency, like in a test from somebody, the detail oriented structure, you know, good architecture, whatever. That's an interesting thought.
Yep. All right. Well, as is always the case, we have pretty much exhausted our time for the day. Mark, do you have any projects you're working on, any causes you're championing that you'd like us to know about? I mean, it could be something we've mentioned or maybe something we haven't, but something you'd like the Imposter Syndrome Network and the folks listening to take a look at.
I kind of can't believe I didn't remember to mention IX Denver. That's a nonprofit that both of us have launched almost 10 years ago now. So get out there and give back to your community. You know, I have been doing that kind of work for free for almost 10 years now, and it's great. I would never have changed it for the world. We saw a problem in our community and made it better. Still getting better. So I guess I would say that once you're in a place where you can, try to give back.
Awesome. I definitely support that. Mark, thank you so much for sharing your story with the Imposter Syndrome Network. And thank you to all of our listeners for your time, your attention, and your support. If you found this episode insightful or interesting, or even just entertaining, please consider paying it forward by letting others know about this show and the great guests we have on. Before we close out, Mark, I have one more question. Is there anything you would change about your career if you could?
No, not at all. I mean, I can only accept what has come my way, so no.
Awesome. We will be back next week. Mark Calkins, I think I know how to say your name.
You do.
Hopefully. Although I'm like the worst at pronouncing names, apparently. I found in doing this show.
Yeah, I've had issues myself.
And there's so many people that like I've known them for a long time.
Right.
And like I realized like, oh, I have no idea how to actually say your name. And we've known each other for 10 years. So now it's weird for me to ask.
I do run into that as well. Especially with my Indian friends. Like,
yeah, yeah. There's a lot of letters in there. And like some like Eastern European or like yes. Scandinavian names too, or it can be pretty wild where there's like 13 consonants.